You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Stugatz, before we get going here with Chris Whittingham's update, I listened to Supodity on my way in.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so you. I give you the note that, hey, man, I really enjoyed the little director's commentary stuff that you've done, little bits here and there, and you made an entire episode that was just drop-ins.
We're just waiting around, Mike, that's all.
It had laugh-out-loud funny moments. I enjoyed it. Dan, the entire podcast was Stugatz waiting for a guest, and such a shitty guest, too, by the way.
It's a funny thing.
Yeah, but we had the shitty guest on the next day. He was fine. He was good.
It was a real
airing today, the shitty guest.
Stugatz sent me with no explanation whatsoever. Stugatz simply sent me himself reading into an audio file, whispering a director's cut. It was just one sentence long and had no context, and I knew what it was.
Yeah, I'm enjoying that. And there's been a lot of good feedback I've seen already for that episode, Stugatz. Be proud.
That's a cool device, like whispering to the audience secrets. Like, it's funny.
Well, Dan, with this particular one, Mike and I were just waiting around for a guest who was a half hour late. And so we just, I don't know, I just started doing cameos and riffing and director's cuts. And
do we have a mystery crate to talk about here?
We have this week a little behind the scenes. Like, we're always rolling. You never know when you're on air, when you're off air here. And we've just gathered some content in recent weeks with Amin El-Hassan and with Stugatz. And it's just kind of a best of behind the scenes this week on Mystery Crate.
Oh, this stuff was really funny. I was eavesdropping in on it. Yeah, the guys actually are always just creating content, and we were actually rolling on that stuff. I'm like, I hope we can do something with that. So you're telling me we did something with that. All right, Witty, let's do the radio show now.
We begin with news from the world of college basketball. Roy Williams has retired after 33 years as a coach, the last 18 of which have been as coach of the North Carolina Tar Heels. Williams won 903 games and 3 national titles during his time in college hoops. Today is baseball opening day. The first of 162 begins in ballparks across America. And one team locked in their star before the season took launch today. The New York Mets signed Francisco Lindor to a 10-year, $341 million extension ahead of a highly anticipated Mets season. The Texas Rangers will be starting their campaign on the road, but President Joe Biden has criticized their approach upon returning home. Biden told ESPN that he thought the Rangers' decision to open to 100% capacity is a mistake and that, quote, I think it's not responsible. And finally, the expression penny for your thoughts was first used in 1522. If adjusted to inflation, each thought would be worth about $2.50 now.
excellent old-timey radio stuff. As a Mets fan, Stugatz, Francisco Lindor, how do you feel about that? He wanted $385 million for 12 years. They wanted to give him 10 years, $325. He set a bogus deadline. Steve Cohen's got a big mouth and just dumps another $15 million in there. And so now it's $341 million for, you know, a great, great shortstop.
He's a great player. He might be the best player the Mets have had in quite some time. And so I'm excited about it. He's young. I think he's going to fit well in that New York market. He doesn't take himself too seriously, which is very important because the media will come down on him if he starts the season, you know, 1-for-34. But he's, Dan, he is a really legit good player. And listen, the money, I mean, the money's ridiculous. The money for Stanton was ridiculous. This money is ridiculous. The money for Bryce Harper was ridiculous. But I always say, it ain't my money. And so I'm happy the Mets got a guy who's young, who's fun, who's really talented, and they have him for the next decade. That's really cool for Mets fans.
I found myself taking some inventory. You know, I don't like these pro days and the silliness that involves draft evaluation, but I did take some interest in some numbers with Kyle Pitts. I told you this Florida receiver, tight end, hybrid, Stugatz, was as good as anyone I had seen catching a football last year. Like, he made the Florida offense was great last year, as great as any offense, because that dude played for that team. And his measurables yesterday at this combine, a wingspan like this has not been seen at the combine from a receiver or a tight end in more than 20 years in terms of just his measurable physical gifts. He's got a wider wingspan than anyone in the last two decades of evolution at that position in the sport.
I'm ready to do this, Dan. I haven't done it since A.J. Green. Call a guy a Hall of Famer before he enters the NFL. Kyle Pitts will be an NFL Hall of Famer.
I can tell you that Todd McShay, I heard him say it this morning, he is the best. Kyle Pitts is the best tight end coming out of college in the last 15 years. Like, he is calling him a once-in-a-lifetime player at that position, which is pretty incredible. And the NFL is trending that way, Dan. Like, if you believe Brian Flores and he wants to have two tight ends, much the way Bill Belichick did, and that's where he came from, then perhaps you believe that this is the guy the Dolphins are going to take at number six. So.
The way that I'm thinking about it is, like, you know, there's these great receivers. Jamar Chase also had some really good measurables, the LSU wide receiver. Do you almost stop thinking of Kyle Pitts as a tight end? Because if you just think of him in those terms.
I never thought of him as a tight end. I watched him all of last season and what everything that he was doing. They were having him do all the tight. They had him do all the wide receiver routes. This is Waller. This is that Waller. Everything that's happening in that sport where you just know you can throw to a spot on a 6'7" guy. When I tell you, hugely athletic guy with wingspan that doesn't have a precedent in 20 years, that's a guy you throw it to a spot, he's always going to be open.
I have his listed position as weapon.
Do you view Kelsey as a tight end? Like, how do you do that?
Weapon.
Just weapon. I do think it needs to be a new position. I also think, I just can't believe we just glossed over this without any fanfare. Mike Ryan, you said something awfully bold back there. We're just going to let it fly. What is it that you claimed with your boldness?
Kyle Pitts will be in Canton.
Dookie ball. And he dropped the dookie.
So you guys tell me something, because I've been watching these big dumb movies that have come out here recently. You've got your boy Zack Snyder making a 4-hour movie.
I saw that.
4 hours? You watched
I saw all four hours.
You watched 4 straight hours of superheroes.
Well, it was broken up over the course of a couple of days. I've been very public about my dislike for Zack Snyder as a filmmaker over the recent years, but it took 4 hours, but an upgrade over the original.
It looked pretty spectacular in the trailer I saw.
I mean, it's ambitious, and the new scenes that they filmed, I guess, were kind of cool. I saw that they're going to put out an even more extended cut. Allegedly, there's going to be a black and white version of this. I don't know how many stabs we need to take at making a good film, but this was, by comparison, okay.
Has there been a 4-hour movie before? Like, we're moving away from traditional.
Ben-Hur?
4 hours seems excessive on a movie. Well, so
wasn't the OJ documentary runtime 12 hours? They put it in like a couple of theaters just so it could be eligible for best documentary.
If you do it in parts, I view it as differently than just sit here for 4 hours. I don't believe I can sit anywhere for 4 hours of a movie. I believe anyone watching this Zack Snyder cut is watching it in installments.
Kill Bill would have been 4 hours. Kill Bill would have been 4 hours, and Heaven's Gate was 4 hours. So Heaven's Gate was ridiculed.
If they didn't put The Last Dance in episodes and just show the entire thing one night, you don't think you'd sit through that? Of course you would have. I mean, come on, it's Jordan.
You like The Last Dance more than I did. I did like the Tiger Woods documentary recently. I would have sat through 4 hours of that nonstop. And I did sit through all of the O.J. Simpson stuff nonstop. But the other movie that caught
on your phone? Because you were sent a screener. How do you do that?
I couldn't stop watching it. It was just that good. And now the guy who oversaw that runs our place. So I expect to be making some cool stuff in the future. But
Gary?
Kong versus Godzilla is a movie that ensnared me yesterday. And this is going to surprise you, Stugatz, because this is not, you know, I come in here and go maximum art house with, you have to see The Lighthouse. It's a descent into madness.
I watched that yesterday.
I
needed a quick pick me
Mike,
up.
You need
Mike.
And so I'm never the guy that likes Stugatz Tango and Cash, and we play the hits, and Stugatz does the thing where he's different than me, and he just says Tango and Cash over and over again. But I have to admit, and I am not ashamed to admit, Kong and Godzilla is big.
Yeah.
It is epic. Like, I'm watching it and I just want to hide under someone's giant toe.
You're doing the thing where you're projecting your own favorite here and changing the billing, because it's Godzilla versus Kong, Dan.
I can't. I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry I've blasphemed against, they're not monsters. They're what?
Kaiju.
Part that I saw, Stugatz, and I don't want to do anything in the way of spoilers here, but I'm simply telling you, neither one of these titans can possibly lose. They're both just too big. It's just clear to me before I've even gotten started, both of them are going to win, and they're the only ones left, and no one's going to lose because neither of these two can lose.
Wait, you have people, there's Mike, what are they called? Monsters? What are they called?
In this film, they call them titans. Historically, throughout cinema, we called those big, massive, oversized monsters kaiju.
All right, but we have to have a winner and a loser. You're telling me there is no loser? There are only winners? That's not something I want to be a part of.
I'm saying that neither Kong nor Godzilla can possibly lose in this film. I don't know how it ends, but I can simply tell you there will not be a loser because neither one of them can be beaten.
One thing's for certain. There is no way that these two adversaries at the end of the movie end up teaming up together and putting aside their differences. No way. That would be way too formulaic.
No, they are a rivalry. Titans across time. It's why it's so epic. But what I'm telling you, Stugatz,
why are they rivals, though?
Yeah.
Why can't they just be friends? Just because they're two big creatures, they have to hate each other?
That is pretty much word for word.
They
the
date
dialogue.
The same person? Like, what's going on here?
That is how they explain it. Oh, Godzilla can't allow King Kong being around, you know, because they're both big or whatever.
Well, there's only room for one, Mike. I mean,
yeah, precisely.
It's a big world. Why can't they just go on opposite sides of the world?
Because they were. See, this is what I noticed about watching this. But now they need to be brought together because the world is coming apart because they can't be contained in their environment.
That's an excellent point that Billy made. And sometimes they're on opposite ends of the planet. So how do you make up that distance, even for a kaiju? Well,
yeah.
By drilling a hole into the center of the earth and just coming out the other side.
It's just easier that way. I think we can all agree. Yes. Yeah. No, that's the way you got to do it. Mm-hmm. It's much easier. It's efficient.
Mm-hmm. There's a monster-sized drills. How do they make this drill?
No. The blast of nuclear radiation that comes out of Godzilla's mouth that can, you know, pierce the earth's crust easily. One thing that I notice in watching this film is Titans have been around now for a couple of years, because this is adjacent to the Skull Island movie, but not really. But this exists in the Godzilla cinematic universe. And one of the things that has just always frustrated me is, why are cities still around if these things can just come in and destroy everything? There's a scene in this film, Billy, where Godzilla is destroying Tokyo. I mean, it's just leveling the place.
So reckless.
And people think that this is an appropriate time to have a rooftop dinner. It's mind-boggling, the people that are just out and about and enjoying their Friday nights as Godzilla is in town. You could hear him coming.
You hear the screaming. You hear the screaming. You can see people catching fire.
We've discussed this before. I want to see a movie about the rebuilding the infrastructure after these massive destructions of cities because it's so reckless. All these superheroes honestly should be in prison for the destruction that they do to these cities. They're doing more harm than good, if you ask me. If you start taking down buildings and entire blocks, and The Rock, I love him. God bless him. But he's taken down way too many buildings and cities to be running around on the street all free willy-nilly like that. It's just easier to kind of keep these people away from these giant cities that they insist on destroying. It makes no sense to me. Danger to society.
You want to see follow-up movies of them rebuilding the because infrastructure of Tokyo?
You know how long it would take to rebuild some of these cities after the destruction they cause? Right. Decades. I can't even drive down the A26 and have it be completed. It's been my entire life that they're working on these expressways. And that's just one street. One street. Imagine an entire city. And they do it all the time.
Just to be clear.
All the time.
Just
the time. Every single movie. Batman. Every single movie. City destroyed. Spider-Man. He doesn't even have weapons. He just shoots webs. City's destroyed all the time because of these giant octopuses, octopies, whatever they are, running around, causing a muck all the time. Every single one of these movies, every Avenger this and that and whatever, every single time they destroy a city. And we never figure out, how was the city rebuilt? It's only been 2 years since the last adventure. Every single time, city destroyed. We never see a rebuilt, but it's always rebuilt by the next movie. How?
Just to be clear.
All the time.
Just to be clear.
Every single time.
Just to be clear, you want The Rock to be walking around just picking
up? No, I don't want him to be walking around at all. I want him to be put in a place where the rest of society can be safe because he's not running around with his vengeances against others, destroying everyone else's lives.
Just picking
Just fight in a ring or something, okay? Why do we have to destroy entire cities and entire people's lives because two people can't get along?
Ridiculous. Just picking up litter. You want The Rock to just be picking up
litter? If only it was litter. If only he was a litter bug. If only that was his crime, littering. Not that I'm endorsing littering. But if it comes to littering and destroying an entire city, give me littering. I said it.
Dookie
and Burger King, give me my straws back, by the way. Get me started on that.
He did say it.
Bold take. Bold take right
there. He dropped the dookie.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Always enjoy talking to this guy. Daryl Morey is a bit of a revolutionary. You've seen how much better the Philadelphia 76ers have gotten. He's someone who doesn't seem to me to totally fit within this world that we've constructed of sports. I've always thought that he was going to wander away from the Houston Rockets and go do things like more musicals. When you stepped away from the Houston Rockets, I legitimately thought it's because you were going to bounce somewhere else with your life and not have it be basketball. But then it made sense. Oh, wait a minute. He found a place that has two young stars and all he's got to do is put a bunch of shooters around him. That's a pretty good job that just came open in Philadelphia. Were you tempted, Daryl? And thank you for joining us. I got a bunch of questions, but were you tempted during all of that unrest in Houston with the China situation, all of it, to be like, I'm just going to go do something else with my life?
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, Dan. And it's been too long, and I don't always feel like you belong in your world either, Dan. So I think, I think that's why I enjoy talking to you so much. But I would say, look, I had a lot of things to think about over the past year, like a lot of folks did. In the past year, it's been a bit of a tumultuous year for everyone, and I really had time to think about what I want to do, and really came to I love what I'm doing. I love basketball. I love sports, and to your point, a great opportunity I didn't expect came along, and Doc Rivers and I both jumped at it basically because I think Doc was here first. I think everyone saw what this could be, I'm really, really thrilled that Doc and the players have us playing at a very high level.
Daryl, when did you notice in Houston that you were going to be able to sort of exploit a market inefficiency where you guys were going to say, oh, wait a minute, we know three-pointers are the way to go, that you had spotted value before the rest of the league had?
Probably when I was hired in Houston. So that was a big reason to give Leslie Alexander credit, who hired me in Houston when I was pretty low on the totem pole in the Boston Celtics. He had been interviewing people for over a year, and I got an interview just out of the blue, and really sold him on the plan and where we could be. And it took a while to get there because we had a very good team with Yao Ming we were building around, and I think we were able to sort of perfect it with Mike D'Antoni and James Harden and really sort of ushered in that kind of style and sort of its purest form. Got close to winning the title, didn't quite do it, but we did win quite a few games along the way. I think the second most in the league along the way. So,
how does a general manager or the head of a team deal with his biggest star and an MVP candidate descending into Kardashian world and loving strip clubs in a way that's hugely public?
Well, as David Stern would say, I think your question assumes facts, not an evidence. So I'll dodge some of the snark in there a little bit.
I don't even mean it as snark. No, I'm just genuine. I'm legitimately curious when a team has as its public face a guy who is a reality star and does enjoy his partying. I legitimately wonder whether someone can pull him aside. Is there any saying to James Harden, hey, how about you? Imagine how much better you would be if you didn't have a pot belly.
Yeah. just to be clear, I'm not directly addressing that question. I would just say, look, you're in the entertainment business. Ultimately, sports is the entertainment business. There's a lot of people who drive eyeballs, drive viewers, drive wins. They're often complicated individuals. And I think in my job and the job of GMs, it's to put them in the best environment to succeed and help them be the most they can be through, their different interests.
This feels like a masterclass in Dan making it awkward. Can I ask you a basketball question about James Harden? Did you like watching him?
I'm not sure I can directly address anything with who you just said. The last time I said anything, the league office got mad at me. So sorry. I
can't say if you enjoyed watching James Harden play or not.
That's amazing.
Hey, I can get you the number of the league office, and you can have them on the show and have them discuss their different policies. Yeah.
Were you surprised, Daryl, when the player whose name you can't say, were you surprised that he wanted to leave Houston?
You're doing great things in Philadelphia.
Are we just gonna
say that? Right,
is this recorded? Or are you gonna like? You all right, gonna cut it
off? All right, April Fool's Day was all a rib. It's all a rib.
Is this like Connie Chung with Newt Gingrich's mom? Just whisper it to me. It'll be fine.
Daryl, give me your honest appraisal when you realized. Wait a minute, you're kidding me. Embiid and Simmons. That's a job that's available. That's gonna be a job.
I know that I was. Yeah, I actually thought I was going to be off at least a year and get more time to think about what I wanted to do with myself, Dan, because when I came available, it was like 10 days before the draft. And that's really not usually when people hire people. So it was pretty cool. Doc and Elton Brand came out and grabbed me. And then, yeah, like Joel Embiid is someone I've always admired. Felt like could be the guy you really build around. And then you've got Ben Simmons, who's coming into his prime. Tobias Harris is undervalued. And to your point, I wish my job was more complicated than finding shooters. But the reality was that it was pretty straightforward. I mean, obviously we had to get the right deals, and it's hard to get those sometimes. But at the end of the day, like, you know, putting shooting around those guys, we felt was like a pretty good plan.
It really is that simple, though, right? For all the math changing and stuff you do, you've got two guys who cave in defenses, and you'd notice, hey, they were pretty good when Ilyasova was out there. Imagine if I put Curry out there. Curry's even better from out there by a good deal.
Hey, anytime you can get a Curry, it's a good plan. And shockingly, Curry has an even higher percentage than the other Curry. But I mean, I'll go back to Rudy Tomjanovich, who was a pioneer as well in Houston. I mean, they won two titles with a dominant big in the center. And I think Joel and Hakeem have some similarities. They're not the same, but they have some similarities. And you know, if you put shooting around a guy, you got a double team and a space four. It turns out to be not too bad of a plan.
You were very good in Houston. You had an ability. I don't know what this ability is. Perhaps you can explain it to me. You were very good at recruiting. You had the ability to get stars. I can't imagine a better talent for someone in your position to have than someone who can attract stars. What do you view as your greatest talent?
I think, first off, I love pairing with Doc Rivers because he's also very good at that. And I would say it's really just selling a vision. And I think I think one mistake a lot of teams make that I've seen is they'll come in and be like, hey, we've got ties to Paramount Studio. We can put you in, Destiny Duck 8 or whatever, you know, and really these players want to know they can win. Like, they know their legacy, especially the top players, they know their legacy is going to be formed by how much they win. And that's how people are going to view them later. And that's how they get paid. And if you can show them a plan, a multi-year plan on how, if they're here, they will win at a high level. That has been always what I led with. Yeah.
Have you ever surprised yourself when you got somebody? You got somebody and you're like, wow, that one's the most surprising one of my career.
In terms of like in free agency, you're
yes.
saying? Good question. No.
Okay. So you expect
like, should I make up an answer for Dan? But no, I went with no. I haven't been surprised. I've been more surprised we didn't get someone. Like I generally go in, and I think this is, you know, true of anyone selling, and you're often in the sales business too, Dan. Like, you have to go in with the confidence you're going to win, or people can smell it. So I've been more disappointed when we haven't gotten guys. Like, we recruited a guy who was a free agent who was on Golden State at the time. And I thought we had him, and it would have been really good because we would have added him and taken him off Golden State. And I think that might have been the way we had beaten them. And unfortunately, at the last minute, he used us as a leverage to get a much bigger deal out of Golden State, which was smart by him. So kudos to him.
But you got George Hill. I mean, that is we tell Dan every year at the deadline, George Hill is the guy you want because he's going to hit you a big shot somewhere along the line in the Eastern Conference playoffs. Am I right, Daryl?
He's a piece.
You guys are starved for content if you're really talking about George Hill.
Thank you, Daryl. Oh, yeah. Thank you, Daryl. Why didn't you just say Stugatz, you're a real asshole? Because I had a question.
I would say, though, you're right. Both Danny Green and George Hill just end up on winners.
Yes.
You know, they're and, you know, Danny's obviously gotten the ring the past couple of years on different teams. But George is the same. Like, George is always there in the conference finals or finals. And so I just saw George coming in. He's coming back from thumb surgery and looking good. He's out there working right now. So.
Can it now be told?
Who knew Stugatz was a George Hill fan?
Yes,
oh,
yes.
We love George Hill around these parts.
Can it now be told, Daryl? I want to know, and I know you got to be careful around some of this stuff, but let me ask the question and take me as close to an answer and the truth as you can. How close were you to acquiring Jimmy Butler in Houston?
I mean, I think it was public what we were offering, and I think they should have taken our deal if they go back in time.
Reigning Eastern Conference champs, Daryl.
We were close, yeah.
Kind of worked out for Jimmy down here, though, you'd agree.
I think, made the finals. That's a pretty good thing, yeah. Unfortunately, they're still only letting one team win, My job would get so much easier to sound like Ted Lasso. My job would get a lot easier if there was a final. I love how the NCAA has the final four. That's awesome. Four teams get to win. We need something like that. Yeah, we need something like that.
How does it all play out differently, Daryl? Because you guys played the math. It was basically we're going to shoot threes and we're going to make them at a disproportionate rate. Our shots are worth more than your shots. If in Game 7 against Golden State, your team had just had a median average Game 7 shooting night from three, how does everything after that play out differently in basketball if you guys had merely had a mediocre night from three instead of an apocalyptic one?
Well, we would have gone on to win, and then I'd probably look like Jabba the Hutt. I'd be like in the Bahamas, just loving life, and I would just, I don't know what I would do. I'm pretty obsessed with winning it, and I'm sure it'll, Andrew Friedman's one of my good friends. He runs the Dodgers, and I asked him about a month after they won this year, and I was like, just tell me it's as good as I think it is, and he confirmed it is, so I'm still chasing it, so.
Daryl, you've always been known as the numbers guy and the guy that was helping lead the way with that analytics revolution. You've dropped some nuggets here in the past where you know what a player is by his third year. I've used that as a cliche now. You're always in on the big name deals. I'd say that's probably your most special skill as a general manager, that you're always either getting the person or close to getting the person. What have you figured out when it comes to trading for guys? Do you value picks less than other teams? What's the secret?
Yeah, I would say it's a couple things. One is you want to be in a city that players want to go to, and Houston, I actually got laughed at when I was first in Houston saying that players are going to want to be here. And we, as a group, we turned that into a destination. Philadelphia is the same. I mean, it's a city that players like and want to be in. So you have to have that backdrop. I do think it would be challenging, to be fair to my competitors, if you're in one of these other cities. I don't want to say them so I don't end up getting blogged or whatever in those cities. But I do think that's a big thing. And then second, it is really important that you stay flexible. You have to win at a high level so other teams want the players on your team, and you have to keep your draft capital sort of liquid such that you can always be involved. And unfortunately, it's a copycat league, so a lot of teams are taking that approach. And so one thing I worry about is just getting outbid all the time. Going forward as Oklahoma City and New Orleans, have 45 million draft picks. So that's going to be a challenge for the whole league going forward. So,
Daryl, does it bother you at all? Because you covet the three-point shot. Three is worth more than two, obviously. That Ben Simmons cannot hit a three. Why can Ben Simmons, a great athlete, not hit a three-point shot?
I would say, why do people focus? He shoots almost 60%. So, I mean, I think I'm not obsessed with threes. Like people say, I'm obsessed with winning. And so it just turns out threes are really good for that. But so are shooting, 3-foot shots. So, which is what Ben shoots. And Ben can pass. Ben also sets up more 3-point makes than any player in the league. So setting them up is a big factor as well. And then Ben's ability to collapse the defense in transition and leaving Danny Green open for corner threes is big. So, I mean, it's all interrelated, and I think instead of focusing on what Ben or any player can't do, I try to focus on what they can do. So.
Daryl, do you marvel at all? Because I remember, who was it that said it? It might have been Mike D'Antoni. It might have been his brother, actually. Just the idea that we were playing basketball the most inefficient way for several decades. Throw it in the post and get the least efficient shot guarded. Like, when did you realize we're doing this all wrong? And how many people looked at you like you were a kook for saying the way it's always been done is all wrong?
I mean, they still do. I mean, I think a lot of people don't like how the game looks right now. I actually have empathy for that. I mean, basically when they put the 3-point line in, they made it worth three, and it is the bottom line is it is worth too much. I mean, it skews the game, and it makes it so there's only one, really only like one path to being a good team. You have to be utilizing that at a high level. And I don't know if you guys are into video games or esports now, but what they do in esports is when everyone starts to play a certain way, they'll nerf the player. So if we were an esport, they would have definitely changed the value of the 3-point shot by now, such that everyone isn't playing the same way. And, you know, it's a real challenge for the league. And I think it's something that will be addressed over the next, 3 to 7 years.
So
that
you've
kind of time horizon.
You've ruined the game. You're responsible for ruining the aesthetics of the game. You're responsible. Nice, James Harden, responsible.
I would say the rules have hurt the game. Not.
No, but you distorting the rules. No. In the margins, you finding your efficiencies and your inefficiencies, and you creating James Harden. This is your fault. You birthed this pooping on basketball as a lovely aesthetic game. Just own it, Maury. Like, honestly, just own it.
I think you're raising a good topic, though, which is, and Bill James and I have talked about this for years. One thing that league offices need to realize is that because teams are getting smarter and smarter, they just are. I mean, obviously there are exception teams, and you guys talk about them and laugh about them. But the reality is, in general, teams are getting smarter over time, and they're going to, like, the rules. Our jobs is to win, so you're going to look for ways to optimize relative to the rules we're given. And so league offices need to be more active than they've been in the past. The NBA has been the most active over the years, but MLB, NFL, all these leagues need to be more active in tweaking their rules over time to make sure that the teams are working towards the optimal, the optimal way you want the game to look, such that they're tuning in and enjoying it. And it can't be that they just keep the rules static. Like, the rules need to be more changeable over time in these leagues.
Daryl, I want to ask you a question about seeing the next trend, the next inefficiency that you can exploit. It seems as though we're trending now to point fives, which is a crazy evolution of the game. Bam Adebayo, a good example of that. Jokic, a good example of that.
Super skilled fives, yeah.
Yeah, you obviously have one in Philadelphia. Is that the next big evolution of the game outside of a massive rule change?
Yeah, I would even like get rid of them calling them fives. I do think for sure, like, it's that every player on the floor is skilled in as many ways possible. Now, you're never going to get, everyone on the floor is a superstar. The market will dictate you can't do that. But, you'll no longer have the Reggie Evanses of the world or the one-dimensional rebounder defenders. Like, you need to have multiple dimensions to be one of the five on the floor, at least as a starter for sure. Dribble, shoot, pass, defend, rebound. Like, if you're not doing like three of those, you're probably putting your team at a disadvantage. And especially in the playoffs, where teams can scheme and exploit any like one dimensional aspect. It was a big aspect in our George Hill trade. Was we were worried that there were certain five man lineups that against certain teams that are going to switch and attack us, that we couldn't put five solid defenders on the floor, for example.
Chris Cody, you want to ask that question? Go ahead and ask Daryl Morey that question.
What would Shaq be in today's NBA?
I mean, amazing. He would be, I mean, I, I would give Shaq the ball 90. It would be the most boring game ever. I would just come down, give four shooters with Shaq, give him the ball 1,000 times, tell him to go to work until his hands are bleeding.
Do you have any insight into what's happening with these NFTs and the cryptocurrency and the NBA finding a new way to oil some money? They've hit a new revenue stream.
Yeah, they stuck a straw in the ground like in Saudi Arabia and out gushed money. Yeah, I think that's a huge. I'm very involved in the crypto NFT space. Have been for a long time, and it's absolutely the future of collectibles. I think because the U.S. government keeps printing money and handing it out to either big businesses or people. It's going to put pressure on people to be in assets, and digital assets are going to be much a better place to be than physical assets. Cause you know, as someone who just moved, or, and I'm sure someone on this big array of Zoom I'm on has moved recently, it's a pain in the ass. Like, I got to move my comic books, got to move my baseball card collection. If you put that all into digital assets, you know, you don't have to worry about it. And so it's a huge thing. There's also great companies like Alt, for example, is going to vault and store and value all your collectibles. So unfortunately, it's a little way. NFTs are going to be a way for a lot of the rich to get richer, because they're going to be able to sit in assets much easier than people who can't sit in assets as we devalue the U.S. currency daily, essentially.
What have you found scariest about the last 18 months in America?
The scariest for me was 6 a.m. November 4th, or I guess it was the 5th by then, when I'm waiting for like the returns for Green Bay to come in, and I can't sleep until I know Wisconsin's going the right way. That was, I can get up in the morning and not like be worried about what tweet is about to hit. And so like that was a huge moment for me. That election went that way. That was when I was way more scared about that than COVID or any of that.
But did you recognize your country?
Did I recognize that my country the last 4 years? Yeah, I did, because we got it worked and we got them out of there. Yeah, so I'm very optimistic. I'm like super optimistic about the United States. I'm super optimistic about what's to come. I guess I'm in the minority. I'm being optimistic, but I'm a huge optimist about what's to come. And for me, like, the last 4 years shows that it works. Like, we got them out of there. So
I don't want to put you in a situation where the subject matter is so delicate that you have scars around this and I get you into any trouble. So the way that I want to ask this question is just, what scars do you have? Because I was really bummed out when you, a free speaker, a smart guy, a guy that I want to hear from on stuff, and I want to feel free in this silly playground that we have to speak his mind, when everything, business interests and everything else in China, and you ended up underneath a fight that I don't think that you had any intention of starting that way. And I'm just curious what the scars were left there, because I didn't hear from you for a while and it bummed me out.
Well, I don't want to directly answer your question, but I would say I am ready for a fight for civil liberties, for free speech. Like, I've always been ready for that. That's been something I've always consistently that's been my main cause for a very long time. And so I'm ready for that fight. That is a fight I want wherever I can have it. I think everything else I've addressed, but I'm just reacting to you saying you didn't want that fight. I do want that fight. That is a fight I want, I would say. I'm super passionate on that. So
I was speaking more to the weight of it, just the human toll of it.
It's been a challenging year for many. I think whether it be like the most recent U.S. election or whatever it is, I think people or Black Lives Matter or a lot of or a lot of the big, there's a lot of big important things happening in the country and the world. And I do think people are more understanding that they need to be part of like getting behind some fight that will help the future.
Working on any new musicals or small ball? Are you retiring on small ball or you have something else in play?
No, thanks for asking. I got a couple things going. So small ball, it should be either in Denver or I'm hoping Philadelphia as the next run, and that we've got a bunch of revisions there. Unfortunately, you know, theater's not existing for the last year has hurt. Do have a new thing going on at Northwestern. I'm reluctant to announce it because it's not. I mean, it has been announced. So if someone wants to Google, but it's a new thing. So we'll see in development right now.
I'm not going to let you off that easily. I'm going to interrogate you there harder than I did on China. But first, let's hear Daryl Morey in a previous appearance. He just sort of got into song a little bit, and he did some lyrics from Small Ball.
Do we want to have sex with giants or know what's between 4 and 6? How to bring the parts into compliance? I just cannot grasp the mechanics.
Really beautiful, moving.
Can you use the actual performer singing that?
No. Instead? Do you have any more?
The license cleared.
Can you give us some more? I want more from Northwestern. If you want to give me some lyrics, that's fine. You didn't give us enough information. Please, what is this about? Break some details. Don't ask us to go search it on the internet.
It's called Expect Victory. It's going to get its first. It's COVID still going on. It's already been cast at Northwestern, and Christopher Diaz, who's a Pulitzer nominated writer, and we've got an unbelievable team, you know, behind it. And yeah, it's coming to Northwestern in July, so my alma mater. So
give us some of the lyrics. Do you have any of the lyrics? And Tom Haberstroh has now appeared in the chat, which means we should play. We should show him some of our musicals. I think our musical skills are better than.
When's your musical coming out?
Okay,
Dan?
No, we will. We'll play some music for you in a second, but I've got a lot of follow up questions here. What is the nature of your feud with Pablo Torre?
I've always been friendly with Pablo. I think it was when he was, I think the feud started when he was trying to horn his way into the green room at MIT. And it sort of went, he was offended that the green room was off limits to him. And I think it went downhill from there, basically. So
at the nerd conference, at the Sloan nerd conference,
the Sloan conference. Yeah, he just walked in like he owned the place, man. It was
Guillermo, put it on the poll. Should Pablo be a VIP in whatever nerd conference it is that there's? Let's go ahead and give Daryl Morey appreciates good music. Let's play some Haberstroh for him here.
Little boy, if you want to shoot mid-range, I'll be Creed Teigen. Effective field goal percentage coefficient. Call Daryl Morey. Be engrossed. Baller at the scene, mean, median mode. Got algorithms to encode. Ha ha. Sorry if you didn't know. Ha ha. Then I read Zach Lowe. Metrics. But the hate is still troll. I love Haberstroh! I love Haberstroh!
Daryl Morey loves it. Let Haberstroh.
That might be the greatest thing I've ever heard. That actually, Tom, singing? Is that you singing that, Tom? That is,
I wish.
Who is that? Who is that singing?
It was me, unfortunately.
Oh, my God.
Is that Kanye?
Yeah, Kanye produced it for
me. Is that Migos? Haberstroh, give us your geekiest question possible for Daryl Morey. The thing that you want to know in terms of inefficiencies he's exploiting, the next evolution in the sport. What's the geekiest thing you got for Morey before we get him out of here?
I want to know, back when you were with the Houston Rockets, you used some of my content to try to get Dwight Howard an MVP. Do you remember this?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So I did the big.
I was using whatever I could use. So, what was your specific argument I used?
It was a big number digital video that I did at ESPN, and it aired about how Dwight Howard was an amazing player or something like that. And you had sent the media a booklet or like a, it had the video in the book.
Haberstroh, you made this question about you. I asked you for the geekiest question.
Ratty you, Tommy.
I asked you,
Tom's out of the green room at Sloan too.
All right, get out of here.
I wanted to know, was that a big mistake? Was that a horrible mistake? Because Dwight Howard actually didn't win the award that you were trying to get him to do.
That's where we were going, Tom. Tom, listen, let me say this as clearly as possible. Go yourself, Tom Haberstroh.
Wow.
I think you got to say it in that rap word. F yourself, Haberstroh. You got to sing it. You can't.
F yourself, Haberstroh.
Exactly. Okay, I think we've realized now who was singing. It was two guys.
Go yourself.
Haberstroh! Daryl, thank you, sir.
That's good stuff. Thanks for having me on, guys. I got to play myself out now.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm going to kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.